Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we're just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right. We gotta change this world, just you and me. It won't get any better if we just let it be. We welcome you to Missing Pages of History. As the voice of MPH Radio, we'd like to thank you for giving us this opportunity to come into your homes this evening. Like always, we're here to serve the underserved communities and to give you information so you can use it as a tool to think. Today, our program will consist of giving you something to think about, followed by MPH Black Mini Fact. Then we have a special feature in which we have included into our program at this point in time in the near future, which will be a message from the hip-hop community. Following that segment, we will then do a community profile with Brother Upshaw. And last not least, our theme today is filling in our missing pages of history with our brother, Mayor W. Smith. That's the order of our lineup today. We want you to stick with us, and like always, you can participate by calling in at 1-818-337-0016 to share your views and your comments. Again, we welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Right now, like always, when we start our program, we want to give you just a little something to think about. We're going to give you something to think about, and like always, this concept of freedom is a very important concept to our people. It's something that we need, but it's something that we often don't understand. What we have done recently, we have gone through some different people's perspectives of what is freedom. We want to share some of these ideas with you and tell me what you think about them. What are some of the freedoms that we're going to mention today may apply closely to your reality? We want you to think about that, and maybe later on in the program, you can call in or write us in and tell us what you think. So let's get something to think about as we talk about this concept of freedom. By Will Faulkner, he defined his concept of freedom as we must be free not because we claim freedom, but because we practice it. We're looking at Jean-Paul Sartre, who stated that man is condemned to be free because once thrown into the world, he is responsible for everything he does. We look at Albert Camus, who stated that freedom is the only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. What y'all think about that one? And last, by Frederick Douglass, he once stated, who would be free themselves must strike the blow. It's better even to die free than to live as slaves. What y'all think about that one? So we have given y'all something to think about, this concept of freedom. Later on, you can share with us which one may closely apply to your realities. At the same time, write us back. Tell us what you think by emailing us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. Right now, what we're going to do is we're going to go into our MPH, Black Benefact by Susie. And this particular program, we have highlighted benefacts dealing with sports. So right now, we're going to bring Susie in. Susie, we'd like to welcome you to MPH. And what are some of your MPH Black Minifacts that you have selected for our audience today as it relates to the field of sports? Susie.
Good evening. Hi. I'd like to give you a brief history, Black history, from sports individuals, and it'll be a total of six. And the first one is Andrew Ruby Foster, 1879 to 1930. Andrew Foster was an incredible pitcher in his prime, perhaps one of baseball's all-time greatest. Foster turned pro in 1900 and pitched for several African-American teams, including the Cuban X Giants and the Chicago Leland Giants. Foster won his nickname during an exhibition game where he outdueled the great white pitcher, Ruby Waddell. In addition to his pitching, Foster contributed his business and managerial skills to baseball. In 1920, he masterminded the creation of the nation's first formal African-American baseball league, called the Negro National League, in recognition of his achievements and on and off the field. Foster was inducted to the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1981. That was Andrew Ruby Foster. The next one is Will Chamberlain, ranks as one of the fifth greatest players in NBA history. Throughout his career in basketball, he was dominant to a degree that few players in any sport are able to attain. Chamberlain finished his career with 31,419 points, and during the 1961 and 1962 season, he averaged an incredible 50.4 points per game. These are only two statistics among many that demonstrate Chamberlain's legendary contributions to the game. Okay. Althea Gibson, 1927 to 2003, became the first African-American to win a Grand Slam title on the World Tennis Tour, earning the distinction of the French Open in 1956. During her amateur career, she won 56 singles and doubles titles. In late 1950s, Gibson won 11 major titles, including Wimbledon in 1957 and 58, and the U.S. Open in 1957 and 58. For her success on the court, Gibson was voted Female Athlete of the Year by the Associated Press. Okay, next, third individual is Isaac Murphy. 1861 to 1896, became a jockey at age 14 and eventually completed 11 times in Kentucky Derby. Murphy became the first rider to win three derbies on Buchanan in 1984, Raleigh in 1890, and Kingman in 1891. His contemporaries dubbed him the Colored Archer, a reference to Fred Archer, who was a prominent English jockey at that time. Over his career, Murphy had a 44% victory rate, one of the most impressive in horse racing to this day. Okay, the fourth one is Ernie Davis, 1939 to 1963, was a running back for Syracuse University and gained national fame for his play in three seasons, 1959, 1960, and 1961. He was twice a team All-American, and in 1961 became the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy. In 1962, he was the top pick in the NFL draft, but his life was cut short by leukemia in 1963. And last and final, Wilmer Rudolph, 1940 to 1994, contracted infantile paralysis as a child, was left her with a twisted left foot and leg. By the age of 12, she had triumphant over her condition with the help of numerous medical treatments. Natural athlete, Rudolph became the first American woman to win three Olympic gold medals in track and field at the 1960 Summer Olympics in Rome. She was the fastest woman in the world in the 1960s and increased visibility for women's track and field in the United States. There you have brief history of six sportsmen.
Okay, Susie, thank you. At this point in time, what we're going to do, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we're going to have a special message from the hip-hop community with June Elizabeth. Y'all listen to MPH Radio, Missing Pages of History.
Can't take
to welcome you back to MPH. You are listening to the Voice of Missing Pages of History. That's right. One of the objectives of MPH is to teach our children. We must teach our children. And talking about teaching our children, right now we're going to make this transition to a special new segment that we have added to our program, which is called A Message from the Hip-Hop Community. Today we're going to have a message from the hip-hop community with June Elizabeth. We must say all expressions from this particular segment are truly an expression from the artist and does not necessarily reflect the station, MPH, nor the host company that hosts this program. But right now, one of the things MPH would like to do is include diverse voices from our communities. And right now, we'd like to bring you Sister June Elizabeth, representing the hip-hop community. Sister June, what you have for our community?
Peace and love, Brother Lee. I just want to say thank you, first of all, for inviting me to say a few words today. I really wanted to speak on something that's going on in our community right now, today, actually, the renaming of the boulevard to Arthur Ashe Boulevard. As, like, we all know, Arthur Ashe, he was a great tennis player, and he's from Richmond, Virginia. You know, he was the first black man to win Wimbledon, as well as the U.S. Open and the Australian Open. And basically, you know, the boulevard historically wasn't known for our people to live in or to, you know, congregate socially. And he was actually barred from playing at courts, like tennis courts around that same area. And I just think it's an amazing event, an amazing thing that they are naming this huge street in Richmond after him. And, you know, the only thing that really connected our community to the boulevard was the Arthur Ashe Center. And my mom told me that that didn't come until later in her years of living here. And I just thought, like, that brought me to the point, like, the idea that, you know, you just have to never give up. You know, he had been living here. You know, of course, he was from here. He passed away in 1993. And, you know, he was a worldwide humanitarian and a civil rights leader. And he died in 93, but he never got any type of recognition outside of just that one center. And I felt like, you know, it was amazing. Like they fought so long just to try to get some type of memorial, like from his family to people that admired him. From, you know, the first time they attempted to honor him was in 1993, and then the second time was in 2003. And I just felt like the message that I got from that was just to never give up. You know, fight for what you want, fight for what's right, and fight to be right. You know, like, you can't, you know, give up on what it is that you believe in. You can't give up on trying to you just can't give up on your dreams, anything. Just continue to just fight and fight the good fight, but just fight for what's real and true to yourself as well. And I just want to say thank you to the city for honoring a great humanitarian, a great athlete, and just an amazing native of Richmond, Virginia. And just don't ever give up on whatever it is that you want to do or believe in.
Sister June, we'd like to thank you for your message on behalf of the hip-hop community. And to our listening audience, we want to keep your ears out. Keep your ears out, because this is an up-and-rising hip-hop superstar here. Superstar in the context of he's going to be dropping information and lyrics that will motivate, elevate our youth of our people to be more responsible. So, sister, we'd like to thank you for this segment and continue to do the work that you're doing.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you.
All right. Next, we're going to do, as always, you know, we like to uplift our communities. And what we're going to do right now, we can go to a MPH community profile with Brother Will Upshaw. He's the CEO of Timber Records. And right now, Brother Upshaw, we'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. It's an honor to be here, Mr. Robinson. First, we give honor respectfully to, you know, to God, anything we do, first of all. And secondly, you yourself, we give honor to you, your organization. You know, you've been around a long time. You got a major impact, influence, and to all the viewers and the commentators on the air. We're very familiar with Queen Elizabeth. You know, she's a hip-hop artist. We hear a lot about her, so we're excited about that, too, as well. But it's an honor to be on your program, my brother. So let's get started. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. Yeah, brother, I'm sorry. Guys, so give us a little history. What is Timber Records? Give me a brief history of how they came to existence.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, again, my name is William Arthur Upshaw III. I'm respectfully, you know, founder and president and CEO of Timber Records. We are a record and music publishing organization. Back in 1990, the vision is very important in anything you do, vision. Okay, vision started. We saw some unfairness, you know, in the industry years ago, 1990, up in the East Coast element, okay? The terminology, respectfully, the industry back in earlier years, everybody go to the West Coast, which is California, you know, Warner Brothers, Burbank, you know, all the motion picture industry capital. So my philosophy was that why don't people stay on the East Coast? You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Make a long story short. But anyway, the vision kicked off, and we saw it. And then during that time in the Richmond, Virginia district area, during that time was Lieutenant Governor W. L. Wilder. He was the first black governor in Richmond during that time. And, of course, everything in time and season. So we sent a proposal to his direction to share upon the abundant situation, this vision upon what's going on. And he really, you know, was very enlightened about it. So we activated Provision, and come to find out, one small thing turned to be a big thing. And we, in the East Coast District area, we was one of the first, multicultural, respectfully, record and music publishing organization. And primarily what we do is we sign artists up, musicians, songwriters, and we tour, record production. We got a very private multi-million-dollar studio in the Virginia district, very private due to an influence. And we do all the copyrights, music publishing, all that type of things, pertaining to radio, et cetera, in the industry, to break it down. And over from 1990 to 2019, you can pretty much count the years of operation, respectfully. But we done toured with, the Vision took us to tour with many celebrity artists, goodness, from Frankie Beverly Mays, goodness, all type of multicultural artists, Jamaican, international artists across the world. And but the major impact is this. We do this with compensation. We do compensate the artists, the musicians, which is another important factor, too, upon the industry, respectfully, okay? All that family in the industry, of course, some folks may know of a young man by the name of D'Angelo on Virgin Records, respectfully. He did the compilation Brown Sugar, a couple other compilations, et cetera, in the industry. But some may not know, he's from the VA district. I can't see the exact location due to privacy, but he's from the VA, our family from the VA district. But anyway, they consider us being like the new, history always repeats itself. They've been marking our pattern of operation, and we consider to be like the new Motown. We like the new Motown upon the East Coast district, you know, helping a lot of artists' advancements in the industry of music.
Brother Upshaw, can you just briefly talk a little bit about the type of artists that work with you or y'all have worked with, just a little bit? I know you have a variety of artists. Is this a company that they are major strength? They do religious artists or music. They do rhythm blues. I believe you do a little bit of everything. But that describe some. Talk about some of the artists that is under your particular label and artists y'all may have worked with.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's an excellent question. Back in 1990, when we first kicked off, we was primarily on the gospel note, you know, anything from gospel rap, gospel music artists, et cetera. And so what happened, we developed a large clientele in that area. Okay, so what happened later, we had a lot of other artists calling us up, you know, from the secular hip-hop district, R&B, blues, jazz, etc. So what happened, we had to go in the huddle in a corporate meeting to see how we're going to do this. So what we did, around 1990-ish, we broke down divisions. So we have a department for blues, department for jazz, department for R&B, department for gospel. And one political reason why we had to do that, in business today, you have something called business discrimination, business corporate business discrimination. So that means that you can't work with a certain group of people and shun someone else out. So to keep an equal manner, we have different divisions. But primarily to answer your question, that we have two with all business. Work with many people from hip-hop, jazz, blues. Blues, Clarence Carter, R&B, Frankie Beverly Mays, goodness. Don't show a lot of actresses. Kim Elise, she just set it off. Lisa Ray, Doggy Fresh, L. Cool J, Yolanda Adams, goodness, late great Chuck Brown from Washington, D.C., Go-Go. Goodness, I can just Bob Marley, Kamani Marley, Bob Marley's son. Just so many artists we done toured with, and we're still on tour season now. But primarily, that's your question, that's the whole. I'm sorry.
Yes, I know you helped develop some of the local artists and increase that development. There's a particular sister that worked with you that I know came out of Richmond. She's right now one of the baddest jazz and flute players in the world. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah, yes, sir.
Give her a little shout out.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, Ms. Robin. Yeah, like, that's another known. It's not nothing with us. It's all about the vision. We have this cliche and nick that whoever does business with us or who we connect to, they always do some type of advancement upon their career. This one thing we do edify is this, that in the industry today, you have a lot of record companies, which we are too. They put in a sense of ownership, like they own the artist. You know, you sign somebody like you own the artist. But what we develop and do, we have flexibility. You know, we'll sign you or whatever we do as far as business, but we put it this way, that your career is joined with what we're doing. We put it that way. And we put it in that like an ownership situation. But primarily, to answer your question, that we have known to have a cliche that any artist, you know, that collaborate with us is somehow just called the magic touch. There's a song called the magic touch, that anything we touch turns to gold. You know, the artists always do some type of advancement. Now, primarily a few that connected with us locally, we have one young lady from Vision Industry. Her name is Master Recording Artist, female clarinetist, Sharon, Sharon. And the clarinet is a very rare instrument today. It used to be back popular with Benny Goodman back in 1940s, 50s, but it came back, especially New Orleans, Louisiana. The clarinet is very prominent. So this young lady here, respectful to her agenda and her culture, that she came to be one of the first prominent female clarinetists by the name of Sharon. She just took off and doing great things in the industry. A few others, too, as far as the rap, et cetera. Okay, but she's one of the most, and a few others that we have collaborated with us and everything else, et cetera.
I must profess, Brother Upshaw, she is dynamite. I remember her when she first came out, and we had a chance to do a feature on her on one of our local TV television shows, and she is now excellent. But Brother Upshaw, what we want to do right now, for artists who want to come into business, who are looking maybe to work with you, how can they contact you and your organization?
Yes, sir. Mr. Robinson, what they can do it this way. You can email us anything you like, okay? We're going to send you an email address. It's Timbrel, T-I-M-B-R-E-L, records, R-E-C-O-R-D-S, B-M-I, @gmail.com. Timbrel Records, BMI at gmail.com, and you can contact us directly, corporate number 804-307-0693, 804-307-0693, and we can take it from there and work with you, okay?
And Brother Alshan, on behalf of Missing Pages History, we'd like to thank you and your institution, Timbrel's Record, for being a powerful and progressive institution within our communities and joining us in the fight to make our communities better. We'd like to thank you for your contribution to today's program. We thank you.
And one last statement I'm going to share very briefly, Mr. Robinson. It was an honor to connect with you over the years, too. You've got a wonderful organization, and we do understand that in the future you look forward this year to have a big music festival, you mentioned. And we look forward to being a part of that. And one small segment pertaining to the African American culture. Back in 1950s, 60s, a lot of people don't know this. Berry Gordy, Motown Records, one of his biggest selling recorded albums he made when Dr. Martin Luther King was in existence, called We Shall Overcome. Ain't that amazing? And in order to people sing that song today, but they don't know where it came from, Berry Gordy, Motown Records produced that record and explored throughout the world the statement We Shall Overcome.
Okay, Brother Oshawn, we'd like to thank you and to our listening audience. What we're going to do right now, we're going to pause on the station break, and when we come back, we're going to deal with our main theme today, which is fill in our missing pages of history with an educator, Brother Melvin W. Smith. You are listening to the voice of MPH, and we'll be right back. Don't you go nowhere. Issues that are affecting our prison existence as the underserved, oppressed community and people. We would like to first and foremost welcome and bring in Brother Melvin W. Smith. Brother Mel, welcome to MPH Radio.
Hey, thank you, Lee. Thank you. Glad to be with you.
You know, Brother Mel, I hate to write introductions for people and tell people who people are. I like for my people to introduce themselves. What are some of the things you would like to tell and share with our listening audience in terms of your background, some of the many things that you have done and become?
Well, I can start with where you are there in Richmond, Virginia. That's where I was born. I spent much of my early years growing up there, just south of Richmond, in Brunswick County in Southern Virginia. Came out of there to go to finish high school in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And on to Massachusetts, where I've been many years, going to school and working in the community, and away from Massachusetts for a while before I came back again and spent some time out in California, Oakland, California, and back into D.C. area, then back to Massachusetts. And in all of that time, mostly working in the nonprofit sector, in education and community development, back in the days of the OEO, Office of Economic Opportunity, so-called War on Poverty, and model cities and those kinds of things. And then in schools, as administrator and teacher in Massachusetts, I was a teacher at the university level, was instructor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, while in California, I did substitute teaching in secondary schools, and some elementary, some substituting in the Oakland school district. And during that time, there has been struggle, and there has been movement, and I've been a part of some of that through the years. In organizations and out of organizations, often having a leadership role. So that's a kind of a general overview of what I've been doing.
Excellent. Brother Mel, one of the things at Missing Page of History, one reason we came to existence, we recognize that it's important to learn and understand our history. We understand many facets of our history has been left out of the so-called history books. And what we want to do is fill in those pages that have been left out so we can make a correct analysis of our history so we can understand not only where we came from, but get a better understanding of our present condition and how to map out the future for a better future for our people. Given the fact in the context, there are some issues that we invited you to come on this program to share your expertise and your perspectives on some of the issues that have had an impact and continue to have an impact on our people. Now, when you talk about history, you know, one of the things about history, it must always constantly be revisited. It must be revisited from the perspective of understanding the positives and the negatives, the mistakes and the errors. So, given the fact I have stated that, I'd like to raise this issue with you, and you tell us what is your perspective or maybe revisiting and re-looking at some of the decisions that we may have made that may have been errors, may have been mistakes, and maybe may need to reconsider. And I'm saying that in the context of, we would like to get your perspective on the issue of integration versus separation as people here in America, as African people. What is your assessment looking at what is happening today around this whole concept of this question of integrating and separation? Where did we go wrong, or we didn't go wrong? Just give me a general assessment or dynamics of how this played out so far.
All right, good. The problem continues, and part of the problem is being assimilated into an empire that is not ours, in which we are really a colonized people still, even though there seems to be some debate about that. But I'm with those who consider the concept of black folks in the U.S. as an internal colony. I consider that to be an accurate assessment. This matter of integration and separation in education, for example, was pretty much a matter of discussion around the table and around the house when I was a youngster in Virginia. My people there were largely teachers and school administrators, a number of them, and coaches. And many of the schools around the counties, the adjacent counties, in addition to Brunswick, but in elementary high schools, and they were having discussions about this upcoming thing. And this is in the mid and late 50s, mid 50s actually, this upcoming prospect of integration. And they weren't gung-ho about that at all. There was things, and I was too young to really understand what was going on and how much of it, how deep. But it was a question that they were dealing with. And of course, later, once that was implemented, the integration, the desegregation, then they came face to face with the fact that many of the teachers, many of those black teachers who had master's degrees and others had worked hard during the summers, every summer, coming to Columbia University, for example. Many of them, Columbia had a teacher's program for the master's, and many of those teachers did that every summer in order to get the master's because that was required, and many of those had done it. They got their master's and went back to teach. Well, many of those teachers lost their jobs anyway under desegregation, and what I'm told is, many less qualified white teachers maintain jobs, retain jobs. So through the years, that was one of the first openings and one of the first realizations of how this this integration thing was not necessarily beneficial to us. And through the years, and many have looked back now, we've seen many of the things that have been lost from black communities that had a great deal more infrastructure in terms of businesses and other support elements of a support system out of necessity. Black communities had things that were their own out of necessity, which to a large extent no longer exists. And much of black success has been achieved, success with, in quotation marks, been achieved through assimilating into white institutions and white corporations. And so what we have is a class of people who have attained the so-called success by being absorbed into a white superstructure and essentially having been absorbed into the culture to the extent that they become more part of the problem than a part of the solution. So this assimilation, it includes a rejection of an African identity and a strong African solidarity in terms of the overall imperialism and colonialism that the world is faced with, and Africa in particular, and African people in particular. And it's allowed us as a people to become so fragmented that we no longer have the same objective as success and struggle. Black power has become black capitalism for many people, been translated as such, and it's acted upon as such. So we have a great deal of a problem with this this integration. We have become American to the extent that we think that having black faces in high places is part of our solution, and which if we're paying close attention, it should be evident that that is not the case. So you know, in general, we have a very serious problem with becoming successful, quote unquote, and becoming American, quote unquote, and leaving behind those real needs that we have as a people in recognizing ourselves as a people, defining ourselves as such, and acting upon it as such. When we have a whole world of African people who have been dispersed largely by the same sources and for the same reasons through the centuries, and we have some needs that are very common in terms of gaining some grip on the resources and on the realities of living. So we're not winning by taking this route of becoming a people that was intended to be separated from their African roots and intended to be of service to this European settler a group, nation, which, like other European settler nations, has come to take the land and gain wealth through the enslavement and the subjugation of other people, especially the African people. So we have some commitment that we are forgetting and leaving behind as a result of this love of so-called integration and rejecting separation, which is a voluntary thing, the idea of separation, to place yourself apart so that you can develop on your own, which is not the same as segregation, which we were against, because that's something that's imposed upon us black people, was imposed, still would be imposed, and that's something done by the dominant group. We had such separate but equal, so-called, in the South. And as I grew up in Virginia, we had segregation, separate but equal, but it was obvious that there was no equality in the separation, because one group of folk dominated the process of the segregation, and they made sure that it wasn't equal and that it was obvious and understood that you were not equal, that you would be inferior and you would think of yourselves as such. So that's one type of, that's not the same as a voluntary separation that has been called for by many groups of black folks through the years, which means that we have community control, for example, or we have self-determination. That's a different type of thing, not to be confused with segregation. So these are the problems that still face us, and we are often confused by all of it, and we're allowed to continue to be entrapped in our oppressor scheme thereby.
You know, Brother Mel, in turn, as an educator, as a historian, when you look at this concept of education and this idea that we should have African institutions or universities serve as a tool to help liberate our people and help them to acquire their freedom, how would you assess the present status of this question of the role of education today and the role of African institutions, the role that they play positively or negatively?
It's unfortunate that they do not and cannot serve that purpose, because they are funded by and governed by the oppressor apparatus, and they're not intended to serve that purpose. They're intended to serve the purpose of providing for good and loyal servants to the system, to the existing system and the existing nation. And we're very fortunate that we have had outstanding individuals in these institutions through the years, outstanding teachers and administrators who have tried to serve the purpose of liberation and of enlightenment and education for liberation. But those individuals have been the minority, the exceptions to the rule. Most of the educational process has been, continues to be, for servicing the establishment and for getting a piece of the pie. People go into it for the purpose of getting a bigger piece of the existing pie, and that is the American pie, which is a rotten pie, but that, you know, regardless, people want to get a bigger piece of the pie, and success is defined as doing so, getting a bigger piece of pie, getting a higher rung of status in the society, and not for liberation in terms of social justice. Any, you know, this is theoretical. Social justice in these institutions is largely a theoretical matter and not something that the institutions are actually striving toward, even though many of the educational institutions, especially higher education, are among the more liberal institutions in the society. And therefore, some things can be accomplished, some things can be argued there, and that cannot be and are not being argued in other places. But even, you know, having said that, having allowed that, they still are largely to support the status quo. And, you know, for example, even now, even though there was a period in which the military was pretty much out of the colleges and universities, but now they're back with the ROTC programs and the funding of research programs for military research and all and the like. And so this period of enlightened resistance that did occur during the 60s and 70s has drifted back toward a you know, the warmongering society and its use of black people, racist use at that, even though, of course, there's black faces in high places in the military and in the university. It still is going toward supporting this empire. You know, Martin Luther King pointed to three evils in the society that had to be resisted, and he spoke of racism. And, you know, that is white supremacy, white privilege. He spoke of materialism, and that's essentially capitalism, which is a materialist system. And he spoke of militarism, and that's the warmongering society that we have. And these are the things that the universities are not dealing effectively enough with. And so, you know. That's where we are.
To our listening audience, you're listening to the voice of MPH. We are speaking with Brother Melvin W. Smith, who is giving his perspective on filling in some of our missing pages of history as relates to the issue of integration versus separation, this whole question of education and rural African universities. And he will speak on other issues when we come back on that station break, and we will open up our lines. We would like to have your views and your comments as we discuss the critical issues of how it's impacting our communities. We'd like for you to dial in at 1-818-337-0016. Please hit 1 if you have any questions or comments. So right now we're going to pause for the station break, and when we come back, we will continue this discussion with Brother Mill. You are listening to Missing Pages of History.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
million on the front line. That's the life they have people feel on a daily basis. Feel like they are at war, in the war, on the front line. We hear you, Brother Eddie. Brother Mel, coming back to you at this point in time, we welcome everyone back to listen to MPH Radio, and we are discussing with Brother Mel some of the issues and decisions that have been made or have been imposed upon our people and its impact on our present-day reality. Right now, we are going to our callers. Brother Mel, we have some callers who may would like to ask a question or make a comment, and we will take them right now. We first will go with caller 6057. 6057, welcome to MPH Radio. Your question or comments?
Thanks for having me. And revolutionary greetings to your guest, Brother Melvin.
I have a comment
and a question combined, I suppose. Based upon your analysis of integration versus separation, it seems as if there's been an intensification of the class struggle within the African community over the last few decades. And I think this is caused by the fact that, as you indicated, some of our predominantly African institutions, the HBCUs, for example, were not really controlled by African people. They were controlled indirectly by Europeans. And they've contributed to the intensification of the class struggle inside the African community by producing a comprador class that wanted to assimilate as opposed to, obtaining genuine liberation and equality to the extent that it would be possible in this type of society. And I think I would like you to speak to the fact that that because in the current political climate, Africans and Europeans are able to socialize openly, that some youth have the perception that racism is over with. And I would like for you to clarify that is taken on a different form. I think what has happened is the fact that people that are wealthy, regardless of ethnicity, have united against the masses of the working people and suffering poor masses who want genuine liberation and equality.
All right. Well, that statement I would only say amen. That is what is going on. I agree with you. That's the picture I have of what's happening in society in general, in American society, and in the HBCUs, and has been going on. There has been a concerted effort. It's not just a matter of natural development. A concerted effort to affect the development of this class of people, and this is part of assimilation. That's what assimilation really meant. Wasn't a natural growth, but a project that carefully nurtured to see that people began to collaborate with the existing order, and that has happened especially among the bourgeoisie, and there has been a separation. They feel largely that their interest is no longer in line with that of the working classes, the masses, but they have come to enjoy the fruits of the empire. As Malcolm X said, described the leadership at one time, he said, these folk are not trying for liberation, they're trying to crawl back on the plantation. And so we have that group that is serving as as gatekeepers, fixers, and the like. And in fact, they're helping to maintain the masses of black people in a more passive state, at least to prevent rebellion, you know, outright defiance of the system, but in keeping with the culture, to get them to enjoy the culture as well. And so we have a certain element of hip-hop, and I guess the sister who was on earlier could speak to it and can recognize it, but much of hip-hop became hijacked in an attempt to make sure that hip-hop did not become revolutionary, and that the guiding lights in hip-hop would be dysfunctional in terms of any conscious arising of our people. So you have the kind of dysfunctional stuff that tends to be the most popular and most materially rewarded in the system. That's part of how the oppressor has managed to maintain a control, a social control, and thus we have the kind of divide that you spoke to. And this is something that has to be addressed. People need to be called out, and there's a class divide, yeah, so be it. It has to be challenged along with the rest of it within the community, black community. Too often we think in terms of either or. We have either or thinking. We're either one thing or another. But in many cases, and this is one of them, we have to work on all fronts and be some of both. And this is how I think we can break through the ill effects of this this comprador surrender to the empire in you know, to our detriment.
Okay, Mia, let's take our next caller. Caller, we bring in 6029. Welcome to MPH Radio, 6029. Your question or comment?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Let me ask your brother this, and I want him to speculate a little bit. About the things that I'm getting are somewhat perilous in terms of implications, but I'm going to raise this question to the brother anyway. One of the things, when we look at in terms of disparity between the haves and the have-nots in society, clearly has adverse impacts on the African community. Also, when we look at things like tariffs in terms of the undermining of the overall economy, which means that it has a devastating impact on the ability of people, working people in particular, to gain access to resources they need to exist. Now, it seems to me you have a situation across the board where continually the needs of working class or African people are being overlooked. And my concern is that if people don't have the resources they need in terms of their existence, then what becomes the strategy of the government in terms of getting rid of all these people who the government can no longer provide for? And I'd just like the brothers to speculate in terms of the potential for catastrophic events occurring in America, particularly we talk about, conflicts between, the right wing and the oppression of African people. I just want the brother to respond to the question.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah, that's seems to be what is imminent. This is much of the empire's solution, today, and whether it be those elements that here in the United States that run this nation and its economy, or those in Europe, for example, much of the solution is austerity. It's talking about austerity. So they really aren't caring about, what happens to the masses and the masses on the lower end of it. economic spectrum. And austerity brings troubles and more troubles, and of course those social factors that have been used to divide people and keep people from uniting all along will be brought into play. So racism, for example, will be and is be, we can see it, the symptoms of it more and more, and that will be allowed to fester. And so you'll have black folks under the gun more and more, and white folks using black folks as scapegoats for the austerity that's coming, and being willing to an attack in manners that we've seen before. This is likely the prospect, and somewhere in there is the comprador class, the class, the misleadership class of black people will have to take a stand, and unfortunately where their position at present does not suggest that they will stand effectively to fight with the masses of their people. So this is, you say, I'm speculating here, but I'm feeling this, and I don't like it. I don't like what I'm seeing and feeling. I don't feel something good at all. I think that we're in for some horrendous times, and we best begin to prepare, organize accordingly to deal with it, to try to withstand what's coming. That's my response to that.
Brother Bill, we only have a few minutes left. We would like for you at least to address, if you can, this issue of the identity crisis as it exists among our people today. We are still discussing and struggling among ourselves in terms of who we are, what we are, and we are still have a need to not to want to connect with our homeland, Africa. Can you talk about those two specific aspects of issues that we need to address if we are to survive as a people? This identity question and the connectedness to Africa.
Well, I mean, it's for us, it's one and the same. So we have to identify and know who we are. It's once again, Malcolm says, just because a cat has kittens in an oven doesn't make them biscuits. So we have to recognize, where we come from and who we are. Not just being black. John Henry Clark pointed out, just being black is just being a color. We're black. You have to recognize what that means and what Africa is, and who we are, and the fact that we've been separated from it doesn't mean that we have to break from it. We shouldn't, because it's a part of our sanity to recognize who we are. Fanon brought much to it, and many others have brought much to what's involved in health, in personal and collective health. And so to be healthy, we need to come to grips. And we made grounds. We made a great deal of grounds during the 60s. 50s, 60s, and it even started earlier, back in the Renaissance, in the Harlem, so-called Harlem Renaissance. There was much gaining ground on that, grasping the positiveness of blackness and beginning to define what it was in a way that was healthy. We just need to do more of that, continue to do that, emphasize. But at the same time, recognize that it has a political element, and that we need to work on that political element to manifest ourselves as a people, and that is the Pan-African perspective. A people all around. There should be no real separation between Africans from Virginia and Africans from Jamaica Haiti or Brazil, for example. I mean, we need to recognize that and emphasize that more and more here and there. And that's a task before us. At the same time, we need to take advantage of those things that are associated with citizenship in our various nations, places in the United States. All right, we are American in that we have a citizenship of sorts. We need to work on those things that are related to that. At the same time, but don't get it twisted and don't get it out of balance. We need to recognize that we have the overall and deeper, identity is that of where we came from and where we need to go, and we need to bring this country into union, into a collective and positive and peaceful union with Africa and the rest of the world, and not have it run amok as some sort of manifest destiny monster that drags us along as being good and loyal servants to it.
Brother Mayor, in closing, just give me a general synopsis on how can we best continue to fill in those missing pages of our history into the history books?
Well, we best continue by teaching, by studying, learning as we go, lifelong learning for each of us individually, and teaching, sharing with our brothers and sisters and others, and debating, and writing, making materials, doing the radio, just as you're doing here, brother, on Missing Pages of History, which is the filling up of those pages of the past and making history as we go, filling up the pages as we go, because we are history. We are today. We are part of tomorrow's history. So as we go and as we do, so goes history.
And on that note, Brother Mayor N.W. Smith, we'd like to thank you for sharing your expertise on the segment of filling in our missing pages of history today on MPH Radio. We thank you.
Right now, thank you.
Right now, we're going to go to station break, and when we come back, we're going to close out with how you can help build and support MPH Radio and Missing Pages of History. We'll be right back.
Choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right?
If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? We're talking about choices, choices, choices. What we would like to say, when you make choices, the best choice we can make must be one made from a collective and organized position. I repeat, we support choices made from a collective, organized position. When you make choices from that perspective, we'll be in a better position of making the best choice in terms of moving our people forward. And forward will mean towards a goal of total liberation and unification as a people. We welcome you back to MPH Radio, and we'd like to close out with a thank you for allowing us to come to your homes this evening, where we can share information with you and to speak truth to power. We'd like to thank all our participants for their contribution to today's program, Brother Mayor W. Smith, June Elizabeth, and Brother Will Upshaw. And like always, we are calling on your support to support MPH Radio and Missing Page of History in particular. You can do this by making a contribution to Missing Page of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. To find out more about our programs and our goals and objectives, we encourage you, please visit us at our website, www.mphinc.org. Our website again is www.mphinc.org. This is a radio program that comes on bi-weekly. Our next program will air on June 6th at 1 p.m. Listen to this program, share this program, but more important, come and help be an MPH. We now have open membership drive. If you're interested in joining us and helping us, even come to part of the station. If you got skills in mass communication, in radio, TV production, we need you. We can use you. Email us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. Until next time, we'd like to thank you for allowing us to come to your homes again. And remember, let's continue to strive to go forward ever, backward never, and fill in those missing pages of history. When we can do this, that means that we'll be in a better position to get rid of this ball of confusion. We'll see you on the 6th of July.
One, two, three.
Segregation, determination, demonstration, innovation.
782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261.